Chapter 15. Jewel of the World Central Traffic Control Supervisor, 3 Nasturtium, to Imperial Flagship, 20 Sunsets Illuminated. Please contact CT. Approach control at once. You have entered controlled airspace without clearance or communication. Declare intentions and vectors for CTC to route traffic around you. Contact CT. Approach on frequency 180.5. Again, Imperial Flagship 20 Sunsets Illuminated. You have entered controlled airspace without clearance or communication. Please acknowledge. Satellite communication. Day 251, Year 3, 11th Indiction of 6th Direction. Query. / Authorized. Onchu, pilots. / Last access. Imago Machine, 32675. Yaskandar Agavan. Last accessed by medical. Neurosurgery. Day 155, Year 3, 11th Indiction of 6th Direction. Takes Kalani Reckoning. Query. / Authorized. Onchu, pilots. / All access. Field too large. Query. / Authorized. Onchu, pilots. / All access. Star 0.3.11. Imago Machine, 32675, Yaskandar Agavan, accessed by medical, neurosurgery. Day 155, Year 3 of the 11th Indiction of 6th Direction, takes Kalani Reckoning. Medical, maintenance. Day 152, Year 3 of the 11th Indiction of 6th Direction. Aknel Amnardbat, for heritage. Day 152, Year 3 of the 11th Indiction, 6th Direction. Medical. Maintenance. Day 150, Year 3, 11th Indiction of 6th Direction. Medical. Maintenance. Day 50, Year 3, of the 11th Indiction, 6th Direction. Record of queries made to Lacelle Imago Database by Dekakel Onchu. Day 220, Year 3, of the 11th Indiction of 6th Direction. Takes Kalani Reckoning. Back into the subway, and past another checkpoint, the sunlit all still, all golden and observant. They were less concerned with people leaving the palace complex than they had been with people coming in, which wasn't surprising, but Mahid was nevertheless profoundly nervous passing through them. She wondered if an algorithm could sense plans, could feel the anticipatory thrum of guilt. If an algorithm, even one which was made up of people who had at least at one point been Tixkalan Litzlam, could have observed the conversation she and 3 Seagrass had had in the restaurant, and act to stop them before they could do anything more. And oh, how she wanted to have time to find out if the sunlit still were Tixkalan Litzlam, considering the stated Tixkalan the attitude toward neurological enhancements, and how all of the sunlit nevertheless turned to look at her and 3 Seagrass as they passed. A collective rotation, like the inevitable swing of a satellite around a star. 7 golden helmets, rotating together. Mahid was braced for them to at least want to ask her more questions about the dead man in her apartments. He was 2 days dead, now. And surely someone like Eleven Conifer, who had been able to show up at the Emperor's Oration Contest banquet, would have had family, associates, old friends from the army. Someone to make a fuss. Someone to demand justice. But the sunlit only paused and seemed to consult with one another and let them go without a word. Perhaps she was being protected? If the algorithm was controlling the sunlit, there might be more than one person influencing it, not just whoever it was in war or Ten Pearl himself, but someone else. Those glimpses of gray, the judiciary agents, or the judiciary mirages, occurred to her again. And Mahid glanced around. She couldn't spot them, but that didn't mean they were gone. Walking faster now, keeping pace with 3 Seagrass with quick little steps, she considered jurisdiction in Tixkalanli law. If the judiciary was following her, perhaps the sunlit wouldn't dare intervene. She really ought to have studied the intricacies of the legal code for criminal law, not just the laws governing the movement and activity of barbarians. She should have done a lot of things. In the subway, with 3 seagrass directing her toward the central train station, Mahit could still feel the racing of her pulse in her fingertips, beating there, along with the ever-present hum of the peripheral neuropathy. "Not arrested yet," she murmured again. 3 Seagrass's expression was caught somewhere between laughter and what looked like a desperate desire to tell Mahit to hush. "Not yet," she said. Mahit grinned at her. Hysteria was catching. She felt like a child, suddenly, playing in the corridors of the station with her friends, holding on to a secret that the adults weren't supposed to see. When she breathed deeply, the wrapped bandage holding the encrypted communique around her ribs pressed into her, a reminder. The central transportation hub for the inmost province, the province which contained 17 million Taxkalanlitslam, the palace, the central city, the province where Mahit had expected to spend the majority of her ambassadorial career, was an enormous, monumental building. It hove into view as they climbed the long staircase up from the subway, a huge edifice crowned with a dome that ate half the sky, surrounded by thorn-spiked towers, a thistle of a building, concrete and glass. Behind it would spread the tendrils and loops of maglev tracks, like a huge system of twisting vines spread in a fan. Mahit knew the verse from The Buildings, which began the description of this station. "Indestructible, many-faceted, the eye that sends out are citizens observing." It did look something like an eye, the eye of an insect. The facets gleamed. When Taxkalanli literature talked about eyes, it was often talking about touch, or the ability to affect. An eye sees. An eye changes what it sees. Half quantum mechanics, half narrative. All narrative on Taxkalan, even if quantum mechanics helped. "Where are we meeting, 12 Azalea?" Mahit asked. It would be so easy to get lost in this building, to vanish into the stream of constant motion, Taxkalanlitslam traveling in and out, a flow like water. "In the Great Hall, by the statue of Azwazwakat 1 telescope," 3 Seagrass said. "It'll be obvious. That statue was done during the period where statues were extremely shiny and also very large. 200 years back, it was a fad. 1 telescope is basically all mother of pearl." An enormous statue covered with the insides of shells that had to have been harvested from an actual ocean. Slowly. Over time. Mahit wanted to laugh, again, and couldn't quite feel why. Why she couldn't calm down. Why everything was edged with this sense of hurtling toward an inevitable crash. "You're about to have experimental neurosurgery. That might be why," she told herself, and nodded to 3 Seagrass. "Let's go, then." They spotted the gray-suited judiciary agents, spotted them in truth, and not just in Mahit's imagination, at the entrance. They loitered there, too casual, too observant, as they walked in. Mahit wasn't sufficiently dazzled by the sudden clear arc of the Great Hall, the cantilevered glass dome stretching impossibly wide, to not notice that everyone who came through those doors was being taken careful note of. When she spotted another one of them, pacing like a distracted commuter in front of the ticket kiosks, but never buying a ticket, she nudged 3 Seagrass in the shoulder. "The mist. Do you think they followed us?" "I'm not sure," 3 Seagrass muttered, almost soundless in the din of Taxkalanlitslam searching for their trains. "There might have been one on the street outside 12 Azalea's apartment who was following us, but if that one even existed, they'd peeled off by the time we got out of science. And these ones were here before we got here." There were a lot of reasons the judiciary might be looking for people who looked like her and 3 Seagrass, beginning with, "Eight Loop has reconsidered how useful I am," and heading on down to, "Illegal desecration of Yaskander's corpse." though that latter action had been mostly 12 Azalea. I don't think they're looking for us, Mahid said. They're looking for... She didn't want to use his name. For Petal, because of the machine. Three Seagrass cursed quietly. And they only followed us because we came out of his apartment, and then... We were innocuous. We went to an appointment and out to lunch. We're not the targets. Again, Mahid considered jurisdiction. Maybe they hadn't been the targets of the agent who followed them, but they'd been followed, and that might have kept the Sunlit from arresting them right then. She found herself in a state of simultaneous gratitude and fury. She was getting used to the combination, that doubling, the strangeness of being grateful for something she should never have had to experience in the first place. Teix Kalan was full of it. Maybe we're not, said Mahid. Can you see him, Petal? She gestured toward what must be the statue of one telescope, an enormous woman with a barrel chest and wide hips, glowing in swirling ocean pearl colors from the top of her pedestal. She couldn't spot 12 Azalea anywhere nearby. Let's go around back, Three Seagrass said, as if we have no idea what's going on here. Be easy. Match the pace of everyone else. It was very like being in a bad spies and intrigue holovision show. Strange people loitering in a transportation center, and Mahit and Three Seagrass trying to be unobtrusive. How could a barbarian and an Asekrita, still in cream and flame court dress, be unobtrusive? But perhaps they were simply trying to look unconnected from the very person they were trying to locate. That might be manageable. 12 Azalea wasn't behind the statue of one telescope. Three Seagrass leaned against its base, perfectly nonchalant, so Mahit leaned as well. Leaned and waited. Tried to see if she could find any visual trace of him in the sea of moving Teix Kalan Litzlim. She couldn't. There were too many, and too many of them looked like 12 Azalea. Short, broad-shouldered, dark-haired, and brown-skinned men, dressed in multi-layered suiting.
Don't react when I move, Three Seagrass murmured. I see him. Follow me on a 30-second count. He's in the shadow by the food kiosk 2 gates over, between gates 14 and 15.
She gestured with her chin, and then set off, wandering with apparent aimlessness toward the kiosk. It was gleefully, loudly, holographically advertising snack cakes, lychee flavor, as well as squid sticks, just imported. Mahit couldn't imagine wanting to eat either of those. Three Seagrass bought something from the kiosk and vanished into the shadows beside it, just as Mahit counted 30 and began to make her own way over. She avoided the kiosk entirely and skirted around its back, where the holographic advertisements provided substantial visual distraction. 12 Azalea was dressed in the most casual clothes Mahit had ever seen him in, a long jacket over a shirt and trousers, all in shades of pink and green. His face was pinched, distracted. The mist were after him then, or at least they were following him. They didn't seem terribly inclined to arrest him at the moment.
Pity there isn't another water garden for us to hide in,
Three Seagrass was saying, soft under the chatter of the snack cake's jingle.
I assume these are your stalkers?
My stalkers multiplied, 12 Azalea replied. There was only one before, when I snuck out of the judiciary.
They must have been watching your flat, Mahit said. We think they followed us too when we left. But they gave up when we didn't do anything peculiar.
12 Azalea laughed, a nasty, choked noise rapidly over.
You must have leashed Reed very tight, Ambassador, to not have done anything peculiar. It's been hours and hours.
Do you think they spotted you?
Three Seagrass asked, graciously ignoring everything else he'd said.
Yes, but they don't get close. They're not trying to catch me. They want to know where I'm going and follow us out to...
To the unlicensed neurosurgeon. If they were tracked all the way out there, Mahit was sure,
the entire plan would collapse under a pile of Takes-Kalanli legalities and arrests.
And they're between us and the kiosk. I can't let them see me buy the tickets.
12 Azalea finished. 3 Seagrass was utterly calm, completely focused, that shimmering crisis energy and determination that Mahit found so frustratingly admirable about her.
I'll get the tickets. No one is watching me. You and Mahit meet me over at gate 26. 2 minutes. Let her walk in front of you. She's much more visible. Even if you are stupidly pretty and wearing bright colors.
I didn't dress for practical spy work, 12 Azalea muttered. I dressed for going out province.
3 Seagrass shrugged, gave him and Mahit both a dazzling Takes-Kalanli-style grin, her eyes huge in her thin face, and shrugged out of her secretary's jacket. She turned it inside out, revealing the orange-red lining, shook her hair out of its queue to hang in a curtain around her shoulders, and flung the now-red jacket over one arm.
Be right back, she said.
She seems equipped for practical spy work, Mahit said dryly.
Reed might be a conservative at heart, 12 Azalea said, not unadmiringly. But her conservatism extends as far as thinking about the Information Ministry as an infiltration and extraction unit, like it was before it was a ministry.
Mahit began walking, slowly, ambling, really, making herself noticeable. A tall barbarian in barbarian clothing. She made herself move like a stationer, like someone used to less gravity than this planet. Someone slowed down. And felt an echo of Yaskander's own time getting used to the pull of the earth, like a reassuring muscular ache. What was information before it was a ministry, specifically? She asked, keeping her eyes on the gray-clad judiciary officials. They weren't looking at her. They were looking for 12 Azalea, who was hidden behind her taller shadow. She wasn't important, not here, not now.
The intelligence and analyst arm of the 6 outreaching poems, 12 Azalea explained under his breath. But that was hundreds of years ago. We are civilians now. We serve the Emperor, not any one Yautlek. It helps to reduce the number of usurpation attempts.
Gate 26 announced a departure of a commuter train from Inmost Province to Poplar Bridge, calling it Belltown 1, Belltown 4, Belltown 6, the Economicum, and Poplar Bridge. Mahit and 12 Azalea stood at the side of the gate. 12 Azalea was pressed against the wall, Mahit standing in front of him, facing him, hiding him as best she could from view. The gate announced the departure of the train in 2 minutes. She could feel the eyes of the judiciary people pass over her, heard approaching, directed footsteps, chanced to look over one shoulder. There was 3 Seagrass, looking entirely like a young woman off home to an outer province from university, and not like herself, coming toward them. And a set of the gray-clad judiciary investigators, converging on them in the other direction. When Mahit made the decision, she made it all at once. She was getting on this train. She was going to find 12 Azalea's secret neurosurgeon. She was not going to be denied access to her predecessor's memory and ability if she could have it at all. And those missed agents might know what train they were going to get on, but they absolutely weren't going to know where they'd get off. Run, she said. Run now! And grabbed 12 Azalea's sleeve, pulling him through the gate and toward the waiting sleek black and gold capsule of the commuter maglev. She had to trust 3 Seagrass to run after her. Fuck, her hip hurt when she did this. It still hadn't healed properly. The doors of the train irised open for them, easily. Iris closed behind them. Up, Mahit said, and 12 Azalea followed her to the second level of the capsule. A moment later, she heard the first announcement of impending departure. Doors will be closing. Please stand clear. And hoped that 3 Seagrass had made it on and that the judiciary agents hadn't and was gasping with exertion still when the capsule began to move, a graceful, soundless shift, frictionless. And 3 Seagrass came up the stairs.
They didn't make it. They didn't have tickets, she said. Look, they're on the platform.
And fell into a seat,
her chest heaving. Mahit looked. There were two men in gray there, rapidly decreasing in size as the maglev accelerated away.
That was more exciting than I strictly expected, said Mahit,
out of not knowing what else to say. Now that it was not over, but paused, she was exquisitely aware of just how much she hurt. Not the best shape to undergo experimental surgery in.
That could describe my entire week since you arrived, Mahit,
Three Seagrass said, and handed her a ticket. Mahit choked a little, trying not to laugh.
So, Three Seagrass went on, blithe and determined. How far out are we going? And does this person we are going to see have a name? Or are we continuing the amateur spies theme and loitering on a street corner with a passphrase?
She goes by Five Portico, and we're going to Belltown 6, said 12 Azalea.
And Three Seagrass hissed a bit through her teeth.
6? Really? She said.
Outside the train windows, the city rushed by in a glowing mess of steel and gold and wire. Mahit stared at it and listened without listening too hard. The sort of casual cultural immersion, which she knew from all of her LaSalle's psychotherapeutic training, was one of her best traits. To let go, to float in the newness, absorb it, internalize when necessary. She needed the rest. She needed to be as calm as she could.
Yes, Belltown 6. She's an unlicensed explanatal. Where do you think she'd live? Somewhere with good property values?
12 Azalea said. He sounded defensive.
If I wanted to get plastic surgery, I could find an unlicensed explanatal in your neighborhood without going halfway across the province.
It's a little trickier to find someone who will carve open the ambassador's skull. Thanks.
A little pause. The train made a soft thrumming noise as it ran, a comforting sort of repeated ka-thunk just on the edge of Mahit's hearing.
I do appreciate you, Petal, Three Seagrass said, sighing. You know that, right? It's been a week. Thank you.
12 Azalea shrugged, his shoulder moving against Mahit's.
You're going to buy me drinks for about a year. But it's all right. You're welcome.
After nearly an hour, the train exited in Most Province, the heart of the city, the only place Mahit had expected to go for at least the first 3 months of her tenure as ambassador. Tourism was, for once she was settled, she thought, a distant sentiment from some other Mahit Dismar in some other more hospitable universe, and entered Belltown Province. At first, there was hardly any noticeable change, aside from in the composition of passengers. A slight difference in ethnic group, Mahit thought. A little taller, in general, a little paler than Three Seagrass and 12 Azalea. But slowly, the composition of architecture changed as well, as they passed through Belltown 1 and 3, and into Belltown 4. Outward, in an expanding fan shape of districts, the buildings were no lower, but they were darker, less airy. The constant motif of flowers and light, the gossamer webwork of the central city, all replaced by tall, oppressive spears of buildings, swarming with identical windows. They blocked most of the light. To Mahit's eyes, used to the narrow corridors of LaSalle Station, the lack of blue sky vault felt strangely comforting, like she could stop keeping track of some small, nagging task and set it down, not having to think about the sheer size of the sky. She wondered what the Tixkalani thought of it. It was probably a sign of urban blight, all these people close together, blocking out the sun. Belltown 6 was closer packed still, a spear garden of buildings in gray concrete, dim from the moment they stepped out of the train station. The sky above was a bluish silver. Three Seagrass had her shoulders up by her ears, hunched against a non-existent chill. And that right there explained most of what Central City denizens thought of this province. How did you find this Five Portico? Mahit asked 12 Azalea, as he led them down the narrow streets. He lifted one shoulder in a shrug.
Reed knows this already. She used to tease me,
but I tried for science before I tried for information, and didn't make the cut on the entrance exams. There's always groups of disaffected students after an exam cycle, angry people talking in cafes on semi-legal cloudhook message nets. I still keep in touch with a couple of them.
You have unexpected depths, said Mahit.
Three Seagrass snickered, a sharp little noise.
Don't underestimate him because he's pretty, she said. He didn't get science because he scored too damn high on information to go anywhere else.
Regardless of that, 12 Azalea said, one of my old friends knows Five Portico, and I trust her not to send us to a complete charlatan. All right?
Only a partial charlatan for us, said Three Seagrass.
And then 12 Azalea was stopping them at the central doorway of one of those enormous spear buildings. It didn't have a cloudhook interface, like the doors in Central City and the palace. It had a push-button dial pad. He leaned on one of the lower buttons with his thumb. It made a whining, blatting sound like a tiny alarm.
Does she know we are coming?
Three Seagrass asked, just in time for the huge door to click and swing open.
That'd be a yes, Mahit said, and walked in like she wasn't even the slightest bit afraid.
Five Portico's apartment was on the ground floor, the only open door in the entirety of the corridor, a deep gray slice of dimness. The woman herself stood in it and watched them come down the hall with no expression on her face, save a patient sort of evaluation. Up close, she looked very little like how Mahit had imagined an unlicensed explanatal would look. She was spare and of middle height, with the Taixkalanli high cheekbones pressing tight against bronze skin, gone ashy with middle age and lack of vitamin D. She looked, in fact, like someone's eldest sib, the sort who neglected to fill out their reproductive quota forms and didn't have the genetics to make the station's population board annoy her into doing so. Except one of her eyes wasn't an eye at all. It might have been a cloud hook a very long time ago. Now it was a metal and plastic section of her skull, the edges of it obscured with long-heeled twisted skin. And in the center, where the eyeball should have been, was a telescoping lens. It glowed faintly red. As Mahit came closer, the aperture widened.
You must be the ambassador, Five Portico said.
Her voice matched neither the middle-aged normalcy nor the artificial eye. It was mellifluous, lovely, like she'd been a singer in some other life.
Come in and shut the door.
Five Portico's household was not given to the rituals of courtesy. No one made Mahit and her companions over-determined cups of tea. She thought of 19 ads and fleetingly regretted the absence of even a prisoner's sense of sanctuary. Nor were they invited to sit down, despite the presence of a couch upholstered in threadbare turquoise brocade. Instead, Five Portico paced a quick circle around Mahit, as if inspecting her general health, and stopped in front of her, square-shouldered, her head tilted up to look in her face. The technology where her skull should have been glittered where it wasn't transparent. And in the transparent parts, Mahit could see through to the yellowish bone and the bright red pink of blood vessels, sealed away from the air.
Where's the machine you want installed in you? She asked.
Three Seagrass coughed, a gesture toward politesse, and said,
Perhaps we might introduce ourselves. This is the Lacelle ambassador. The boy is the one who contacted me. And you are a High Palace Information Ministry official who hasn't been out province since you had to take school excursions. I'm who you hired. Are you satisfied?
Three Seagrass widened her eyes in a Taixkalanli formal smile, viciously pained.
To be sure, she said, I didn't expect hospitality from you, Explanatal, but I thought I might make the attempt.
I'm not an Explanatal, Five Portico said. I'm a mechanic. Think about it, de secreta, while I talk to your ambassador.
There's already a machine in my head, Mahit said, here, where the brainstem meets the cerebellum.
She tilted away from Five Portico, twisting to show her, and ghosted a thumb over the tiny scar ridge at the top of her neck. I want you to install the new one exactly where and in the same fashion as that one is now. The central portion unweaves and can be woven back together, the connections to the outer machine re-soldered.
And what precisely does this machine do, Ambassador?
Mahid shrugged. It's a form of memory amplification. That's simplest. That was not simplest, but it was as much as she was willing to share on 3 minutes' rude acquaintance. Five Portico looked both intrigued and dubious, and both expressions seemed natural to her face.
Is the current version damaged? She asked.
Mahid hesitated, and then nodded.
Can you describe how?
The questions Five Portico was asking were subtly different from the sorts of questions Mahid had heard from 12 Azalea, or 19 Ads, or even the Emperor himself when she talked about the Imago machines. They felt oblique, shifting, hinting at the actual purpose, but not outright pushing for Mahid to reveal it. Mahid realized that she must ask them all the time to all sorts of people who didn't want to reveal why they needed illegal neurosurgery, and felt peculiarly comforted by not being anything like Five Portico's first patient.
I don't know what you'll see when you open me up, she began.
The damage might be mechanical and visible. It might not be. The machine is not functioning properly, and I am also having what I can only describe as the symptoms of peripheral neuropathy when I try to access it.
And at what point in the extraction and replacement would you like me to abort, Ambassador?
The red glowing center of Five Portico's artificial eye widened, telescoping. It was like looking into a laser housing's white-hot heart.
We would prefer the ambassador not be damaged, 3 Seagrass said.
Of course you would. But it isn't you whose skull I am cracking, a secreta. So I'd have it from the ambassador herself.
Mahid considered what disasters she was prepared to tolerate. None of them, tremors, blindness, cascading seizures, death, seemed terribly important in the face of all Tixkalan pointed at her station, wide jaws akimbo. She'd never felt like this before, untethered from everything, a tiny mote of a person on this enormous and teeming planet, about to try an experiment that even LaSalle's own vaunted neurologists wouldn't approve of.
I'd like to live, she said, but only if I am likely to retain most of my mental faculties.
Behind her, 12 Azalea made a protesting noise.
Really, he said, I'd be a little more conservative, Mahid. Five Portico takes a person seriously.
Five Portico tapped the tip of her tongue against her teeth with a small, considering snort.
That vote of confidence is appreciated, she said, with such dryness that Mahid was not entirely sure if she was offended or pleased.
Alive and mentally agile. All right, Ambassador. And how are you prepared to pay for this little adventure? Dismayed, Mahid realized she hadn't even thought of how she would be paying. She had her ambassadorial salary, as yet uncollected, and she possessed some doubts that she'd ever receive a single paycheck if the Taixkalani government devolved any further. And she had a currency account on a credit chip that wouldn't even be read by anything but a LaSalle bank machine. And she'd come out here, somehow thinking that this surgery would be like the restaurants in the palace, someone else's largesse, or someone else's political bargain. It was stupid. She hadn't thought. She'd been behaving like, oh, like a Taixkalani noble, perhaps. Fuck it. You can have the machine you remove, she said, and you can do with it whatever you like. As long as whatever you like is not handing it over to a member of the science ministry, or the emperor himself.
Mahid,
3 Seagrass said, shocked. Mahid looked at her, and set her jaw against the way all the lines of 3 Seagrass's face curved into betrayed disappointment. Had it really mattered to her so much that Mahid had been respecting Taixkalani values, going along with the modes and functions of Taixkalani bureaucracy and palace culture?
and here she was giving away what Yaskander had tried so hard to sell.
Yes, yes, it probably had. And she didn't want that to be true, but here it was. No friendship after all, no chance-found ally, only self-interest. And that hurt, and there wasn't a thing to be done about it right now.
And she did not have the time or energy to explain herself, or to try to make that disappointment go away. But Five Portico said, "Done," and looked as if Mahit had given her a rich-flavored dessert to bite into. Mahit felt ill. A little piece of technological piracy from a culture that actually practices neurosurgery is worth more than just one expedition into your head, Ambassador. Anything else you need done? Vision enhancement? Reshape your hairline into something even the Asekreta here would think is attractive?
That's not necessary, Mahit said, trying not to flinch, trying not to let her expression change at all.
Perfectly takes Kalanli. Serene, like Yaskander had taught her. Was she killing him? Her imago, her other self? Was that the real price she was paying? Destroying the person she was supposed to have become? Even if she intended to replace him with himself?
As you like, said Five Portico. Barring events beyond my control, even out here in Belltown we're not immune to sunlit raids, Ambassador, and I'll hand over your machine if it means my life. I promise none of your off-world technology will get back to the people who want it most.
This was a terrible idea,
3C Grass said, to no one in particular, and 12 Azalea put his hand on her arm.
I know, Mahit said, but I don't exactly have a better choice.
I imagine you don't, said Five Portico, or you'd never have ventured out here. Come on into the surgery. Let's get started. You'll have her back in 3 hours or so, Asekretim, if you get her back at all.
Chapter 16 Curfew, 2200 hours to 0600 hours. Due to increased civil unrest, the Sunlit have instituted a curfew in the following provinces: Central South, Belltown 1, Belltown 3. Public announcement on Cloudhook and news feeds. Day 251, Year 3 of the 11th Indictment. In light of current circumstances, the Tix Kalanli Imperium requests the services of a new ambassador from LaSalle Station. Message ends. Diplomatic communique delivered by a courier from Ascension's Red Harvest to the government of LaSalle Station. Aside from sterile cleanliness, Five Portico's surgery bore no resemblance to the white plastic suites Mahit remembered from LaSalle. It consisted of a polished steel table on an adjustable platform, surrounded by a forest of mobile instrumentation arms and complicated restraints. She felt dreamlike, entirely unreal, as she stripped out of her jacket. She left her shirt on, with her LaSalle secrets still bound to her ribs underneath it. Five Portico did not seem to care. She briskly guided Mahit to lie on her belly on the table and secured her head with a cage of padded bars and straps. This was absurd. She was going to let a stranger rip her imago machine out of her in a back room of an apartment complex on another planet. She had said yes, over and over.
Yaskander, she thought, one last desperate reaching out. Forgive me. I'm sorry, come back, please.
Still silence. Nothing but that nerve damage flicker down her arms to her outermost fingers. Five Portico came at her with a needle, the tip beating with anesthetic. The iris of her artificial eye yawned, a shutter spin of metal expanding outward. The needle's sting in Mahit's upper arm was a sharp afterthought in the face of the white laser heart of that eye. She was dizzy. Five Portico's hands were on her arms. She could feel all of her bones where they pressed against the steel. That laser eye slipped wider. She could feel its heat. Was she going to use the eye to cut? Blank. Slow decay.
a winding down wound backward, wound up again, the memory of a closing dark descent, and then he woke to unstartled flesh, a flicker of oxygen drawn easily, slowly through the throat. Relief, first. Dizzying, profound relief. Breathing. The intense joy of lungs perfused with air, where no air had been able to come. He had been on the floor. On the floor and choking. The carpet pile pressed into his cheek. And now his cheek was on something cold. A breath. Slower still. Drugged slow. Not his cheek. The lungs too small. The body narrow and brittle bright with youth and exhaustion easily mixed. And had he ever been this young? Not for decades. Other body. A new small self. He was dead, wasn't he? Dead and an imago in a new body. His mouth was making keening, absurd sounds. He couldn't figure out why. It didn't matter. He was breathing. He sank back into blackness. Sunrise on LaSalle Station happens 4 times in a 24-hour cycle. Sunrise across the backs of his, unlined, square-nailed hands, resting on tempered gray steel. Cold. His fingers prickle with adrenaline, like stinging needles. Across from him is Daj Taratz. From somewhere distant, a voice he doesn't recognize. This Daj Taratz is absurdly young. He looks more like a person than the mobile cadaver that someone else is remembering him looking like. Gray-faced, under the tight, speckled gray curls of his hair, saying,
"We are going to send you to Takes Kalan, Mr. Agavin, if you're willing to go."
He says, as he remembered himself saying, as she had said, "I want to. I have always..." And the rush of bright desire, the naked, shameful want for the thing that was not his by right. Was this the first time he felt it? Of course not. It hadn't been the first time for her either.
"Your wanting to is not why you are being sent," says Daj Taratz, "though it might mean the Imperium finds more flesh on your body to feast on and doesn't spit you back out at us for a while. We need influence in Takes Kalan, Mr. Agavin. We need you to get in as far as you can go and be indispensable."
He says, "I will be," with all the arrogance of his youth. And only then does he ask, "Why now?" Daj Taratz pushes a star chart across the steel table. It is fine and precise, and Yaskander knows these stars. They are the stars of his childhood. At one edge of the chart, there are a series of black spots marked out coordinates, places where something has happened.
"Because we may have to ask Takes Kalan to preserve us from something worse than Takes Kalan," he says. "And when we ask, we want them to love us, need us. Make them love you, Yaskander."
"What happened at these places?" Yaskander asks, one uncalloused fingertip resting on those spreading black dots.
"We are not alone out here," says Daj Taratz. "And what else is out here is hungry, and nothing else but hungry. They have only been quiescent thus far, but that might change at any moment. When it does, I want you to be ready to ask Takes Kalan to intervene. At least a human empire only eats a person from the heart outward."
Yaskander shudders, angry and afraid at once, pushes back the anger, the insult, the feeling of what you love makes you despicable, in favor of asking a useful question. "We've met aliens before. Why is this different?" Daj Taratz's face is serene and composed and utterly cold. Yaskander will dream of it in bad moments, knows he will, remembering forward, will dream of him saying this.
"They do not think, Yaskander. They are not persons. We don't understand them, and they don't understand us. There is no reasoning or negotiation to be had."
Dream it. and wake the kind of cold no heavy blanket or warm-fleshed bedmate can dispel, and think to himself, why didn't Taratz tell the council? Why was I his weapon of choice? What does he want for Lascelles Station to become, to risk this danger for some unknown stretch? 20 years, someone murmurs, of time. He'd known, even then, that Taratz wanted something larger than the military protection of Taixkalan. But then he'd been on the city, at court, and it hadn't mattered.
I am remembering this for the second time. I am remembering this for the second time. I am remembering what I have never seen. I've seen this. I am this. Who are you?
An inward turn, searching, to find that foreign voice, to look at her inside themselves. A turning in. And in turning, they see one another, doubled.
I'm Yaskander Agavan, says Yaskander Agavan.
Yaskander Agavan is 26 years old and has been in Taixkalanli territory for just over 32 months. Yaskander Agavan is
dead. Dead, I saw you dead on a plinth in a basement. I'm dead because you're dead.
40, almost 41, and knows the minor inevitable physical tragedy of middle age, the sag around the middle, and the jawline.
I'm Yaskander Agavan, says Yaskander Agavan, and you are an imigo I sent back to Lascelles 15 years ago. Who the fuck was stupid enough to put an imigo of me into me?
That would be me. Again, that turning inward, turning sideways and seeing high-cheekboned woman, short-cropped hair, tall and narrow with a sharp prow of a nose and gray-green eyes, bloodshot, exhausted.
I'm Mihit Dismar, says Mihit Dismar, and I am both of you now. Blood and starlight, says Yaskander,
each of him, both of him, exactly the same tone on the Taixkalanli curse.
Why did you do that?
Laughing inside one's own mind is uncomfortable, Mihit realizes as she does it. Or maybe what's uncomfortable is trying to fit three minds into one mind, and she, they, are going to break apart right along the fault line where the other two are too much alike and she is not. She is female, a generation younger, 4 inches too short, and she likes the taste of processed fish flake powder on her breakfast porridge and they are repulsed. Tiny stupid things like that. And she is falling inside her own mind, feeling like an echo, the place where she is being carved open and made into something she's not under alien and impersonal hands. Lascelles Station has a long tradition of psychotherapy, because if it didn't, everyone on board would have decompensated into identity crisis a long time ago. In the earliest stages of integration with an imigo, during the most difficult part, where the two personalities are sorting out what is valuable about the imigo structure and what should be discarded, what is necessary for the host personality to keep as self-identity, and what can be edited, written over, given up. In those early stages, what a person is supposed to do is consider a choice, a small choice, an unimportant one where the imigo and the host choose the same way. To focus on that choice as a still place, a conflictless heart, something to build out from. Mihit, says one of the Yaskanders. She thinks it's the young one, her imigo, the one who is more than half her already.
Mihit, remember how you felt when you first read Pseudo-13 River's expansion history, and you came to the description of the triple sunrises you can see when you're hanging in Lascelles Station's lag range point, and you thought, at last, there are words for how I feel, and they aren't even in my language.
Yes, Mihit says. Yes, she does. That ache, longing, and a violent sort of self-hatred that only made the longing sharper.
I felt that way.
We felt that way. Both of their voices, almost the same. Electric fire in her nerves. The sweetness of being known. Abruptly and sickeningly, Mahit was aware in a way she never wanted to have been aware of the movement of air currents on the internal structure of her cervical vertebrae. A sickeningly intimate caress that transmuted into a cascade of nerve impulse, fingertips and toe tips lighting up with shimmering pressure that flipped over, the shunt of some massive switch, to sudden pain. Why wasn't she unconscious? What was Five Portico doing to her? Mahit tried to scream and could not. Whatever drugs were supposed to be keeping her under the threshold of unconsciousness were paralytic. At least something works, she thought horribly. At least she wasn't going to thrash and tear out her own nervous system on the points of Five Portico's microsurgery rig. Waves of electric feeling up from her extremities in a helpless rush. There are two of them. They see each other. One is dead and one decohering. Young face a half-remembered sketch, filled in with Mahit's eyes, green instead of brown. The wrongness of being in an unfamiliar sensorium. This body's sense of smell more acute, her stress response hormones different, more tolerance of greater pain, and some Yaskander, it doesn't matter which, remembers that female hormonal bodies are simply better at dealing with pain than male hormonal ones. Thinks, at least that'll be easier. But it hurts so much. What is happening to her? Them. Her. Flicker shuffle. Memory scraps, like drifting debris in zero-G, caught in some sun glint and illuminated to the point of visual pain. Sun glare, through the window falling on the back of his hand. There are too many lines there, the veins prominent. He'd never thought he'd get old on Taixkalan. But here he is, writing in cipher on paper in his apartment, informing Daj Taratz that it is unsafe to send further Imago copies of himself by any channel, and he will not be returning to Lassell again to leave his Imago machine in safekeeping and have a new blank installed to continue recording. It isn't true. What's not safe is letting anyone from Lassell know what he's prepared to do in order to keep them all safe. He feels not just old, but ancient. A decaying conglomeration of choices made in extremis, and out of passion, a terrifying combination. But extremis and devotion would be worse, and might be truer. In extremis, we must ensure that the Emperor's wishes for his successor are respected, says Aedloop. And therefore I propose I adopt the 90% clone as my legal heir. Yaskander stares at her, thinks, nothing I will do to this child is as bad as what his own people have planned for him. They will control every aspect of his life. They made him. They choose for him. Is giving him to the Emperor to dwell inside so much worse? Then he thinks, yes, it is. And I'm doing it anyway. The Emperor's sixth direction is resplendent on his sunspear throne, a casual intensity on every plane of his face, and Yaskander's stomach flips over in giddy anticipation, a wave of electric feeling that lodges in the base of his throat. He wants to talk to me. I've shared enough interesting maybe secrets, this is going to work. I know what I could offer. What he won't say no to. His last bite of stuffed flour lodges in the base of his throat. He cannot breathe or swallow. The place where Ten Pearl had stabbed his wrist is a bright spike of heat. Ten Pearl looks at him critically from across the table and sighs, a faint melancholy sound, resigned. I did try to come up with a better way to keep you out of our Emperor's mind, he says.
And so did 19 ads. Do forgive her, if your religion grants you the sort of afterlife that involves forgiveness.
The flutter of memories coalesces, collapses. Mahit follows it down, down into the center of the three of them. There is a flicker of resistance.
No one should know. I can't. It's...
You're dead, thinks Mahit.
I'm dead,
thinks the other Yaskander, the young one. Before...
Was the Emperor in bed with you when he asked you to make him immortal?
19 ads sprawled across Yaskander's naked chest, props her chin on her hands and looks up at him with deadly seriousness. She's slick, all over with fine sweat. Yaskander should stop finding her erotic at any point now, considering what she's just asked him. But it doesn't seem to make a bit of difference. He wishes he was surprised at himself. He trails his fingers through her hair, gets them tangled in the dark, silky strands of it. The Emperor's hair is like this, but silver gray. The texture is the same. The other Yaskander is a flicker, mostly libido, purient interest that Mahit feels as a pulse low in her groin, an acknowledgement of desire. It almost shields her from an explosive realization. The answer to 19 Ads' question is yes.
You got her to notice you, says Yaskander to Yaskander. I was 10 years older than you that night, and she started taking me seriously about 2 months before it, says Yaskander. Shut up, and let me remember this. This was... enjoyable? No, says the Yaskander whose memory therein. No, this was important.
Mahit is flooded with the memory of 19 ads in the bathroom in her office complex, the strange tenderness of her hands on Mahit's hands, the brisk, sudden care of her. She tries to recall if the want had been her own, or Yaskander's, or both of theirs. Says to the both of them, watching this memory,
Blood and starlight, what made you think this was a good idea?
She makes the echo vicious. Viciousness does not cover the revelation that she is not at all surprised that Yaskander had seduced, been seduced by, either 19 ads or the Emperor himself. Both of them. In that remembered bed, Yaskander averts his eyes from the calm and even gaze of 19 ads and says,
It's not immortality, if that's what you're asking. The body dies, and that really does matter. Most of personality is endocrine.
19 ads considers this. Her nakedness seems to make no difference to the cool evaluation in her face. It is the same expression she'd worn before she'd taken him to bed.
So you match for endocrine compatibility?
We match for personality. There are a lot of different endocrine systems that can produce very different people, and it's whether the personalities can integrate that matters. But it's easier when there's a degree of physical similarity, or similarity in early life experience.
His brilliance wants to have a clone made.
Yaskander shudders at the idea, and tries not to let 19 ads see him do it. Yaskander shudders. Yaskander Mahit shudders. Some taboo seems to be indelible, no matter how many takes Kalanlitslam one is seduced by, or how long a person marinates in the culture of the palace. One doesn't put an imago into the clone of the predecessor. There's too much congruence. The personalities don't integrate. One of them wins instead, and whatever the other self had to offer is lost.
We don't use clones for imago hosts, 19 adds. I don't have any idea how a clone body will change what happens to the expression of six direction as an imago.
She clicks her tongue against her upper teeth. She is plastered against him. She can feel his revulsion just fine, he suspects. If I think about it as reuse of his brilliance, it disturbs me less. But it still disturbs me, she says. Yaskander says,
I'd be surprised if it didn't. It disturbs me, and I suggested that he use an imago machine in the first place.
Then why did you suggest it? Yaskander sighs and shifts them over in the pillows. When he lies on his side, 19 adds fits in the hollow cup made by his hip and chest, a small, bony presence, indelible.
Because Tix Kalon is an enormous, hungry thing, and his brilliance, sixth direction, is neither crazy, nor power-hungry, nor cruel. There aren't all that many good emperors, 19 adds, even in poetry.
And you love him, she says. Iskander thinks of waking up, wrung out and pleasantly aching, an hour or so after he'd fallen asleep in the emperor's bed, and finding him awake, a stack of infofiche on his bare knees, working. He'd curled around him then, made a warm curve of himself as a brace to work from. It was such a small thing, and Sixth Direction had left one hand cupped to Iskander's cheek, lingering. He'd wondered, then, if he ever slept, and heard an echo like a cloud hook in his mind, a verse from 14 Scalpels, Encomia for the Fallen of the Flagship, 12 Expanding Lotus. The verse describing the captain of that ship, how she had died with her people. There is no star chart, unwatched by her sleepless eyes, or unguided by her spear-calloused hand. And thus, she falls, a captain in truth. Sleepless emperors. Seduction's a matter of poetry, of a story he wants to be true. And I love him, Iskander says to 19 adds. I shouldn't, but I do. So do I, she says. I hope I still will, when he's not himself any longer. Are we ourselves? One of them is asking. One of them thinks this is a rhetorical question. There's continuity of memory, and that makes a self. A self is whoever remembers being that self. One of them corrects, continuity of memory filtered through endocrine response. One of them corrects, we all remember being that self, and we are not the same. They see each other, that peculiar internal triple vision. Mahit does not remember seeing Iskander the first time she did this. Iskander, her imago, her other self, a tatter fading now, never quite cohesive. The parts of him that exist now are only the parts which were already written into her neurology. He does not remember it either, and does not know, a miserable confessional spill of not knowing, if he has forgotten, or if he has simply remembered what Mahit remembered, or what Iskander, the other Iskander, dead, caught up on the point of his dying like a man impaled, remembered. His last bite of stuffed flour lodges in the base of his throat. He cannot breathe or swallow. Stop it, Mahit says. You were dying, and now you're us. She is still reeling from his other memories, from knowing the depth of his mutual seduction with Takes Kalan. But she has enough sense of herself, still, it is her body they are part of, to not want to feel again the strangling poison administered by Ten Pearl. You were dead, and now you're not, and I need you, she says. I need your help, Iskander. I am your successor, and I need you now. Her Iskander, a torn rag. I'm sorry. The old man, dying in love, a gasp, an attempt to breathe, to control the lungs he lives in now. On that steel table, grit-teethed and straining into a convulsed, tonic-clonic arch, Mahit, or Iskander, came to horrified consciousness for a second time since Five Portico had begun the surgery. The terrible sensation of her nervous system being open to the air was gone. Tiny mercy. At least there were no more instruments inside her skull. At least if she was going to have convulsions, she was going to fry her brain with anomalous electrical activity, not tear it up with blunt force trauma. Her lungs seized. Iskander breathed differently than she did, was used to larger lungs, or lungs that were currently frozen in neurotoxic paralysis. Most of her vision went to sparkles, blue and white, encroaching fizzing gray at the edges of her visual field. And she tried not to panic. tried to remember how to get this endocrine system to breathe, to calm down, to stop.
Yaskander, I need you. We have work. You don't get to be finished.
The hand which had been burnt by the poison flower slammed into the steel table, and for a dizzy moment, she couldn't tell if the pain was her own or the memory of Yaskander dying with a needle stabbed into his hand, radiating poison heat. She felt that same electric rush down her ulnar nerves which had been signaling the malfunctioning of the Imago Yaskander she'd shared her mind with. What if all this pain was useless? What if it wasn't the Imago machine that had been sabotaged, but Mahit herself? The malfunction was in her nerves. What if she'd had five portico break her open for nothing?
Mahit, said Yaskander.
The internal voice was peculiar, twinned, patchy. But there. Her spine was a horrible arch that she couldn't release.
We're not dying unless you make us die,
she told that voice, and tried to believe it. There was a stinging needle stick, this time in the flesh of her buttock.
Five portico, Mahit thought. That's five portico, trying to fix me.
Flat darkness swallowed her up like a thunderclap. It was a reprieve.